Well, there are many musicians who make the shift from lyrics to literature, but Simon Felice has always straddled the two. You may know him from his band, the Felice Brothers, which he formed with two of his seven brothers. He was also the frontman for The Duke and The King. In his new life as a solo performer, he describes himself as a troubadour. Simon Felice grew up in the Catskills, a beautiful region in the Hudson River Valley in New York State. It's where his latest novel, Black Jesus, is set, in a town he calls Gay Paree. It's a sardonic name because it's a place for the marginalised, the strugglers, the stragglers and the dirt poor. Black Jesus is a love story about two very wounded people, a returned serviceman who was blinded during the Iraq War and suffers from nightmares, and a former ballerina who's now a stripper, escaping an abusive boyfriend. She takes to riding America's highways on a clapped-out moped. Here's Anita Barrow welcoming Simon Felice to the book show.
It's my pleasure to be down here with you guys.
Now, your name, Simon Felice, it has an E on the end of it. Shouldn't it really be Simone?
My mom named me Simone. Everyone just called me Simon. So it's really what you prefer.
And Felice, Simone Felice.
My grandfather's from Malta, half Irish and half Maltese. So Felice is really Felice. So Simone Felice is like the way you'd say it, you know? But I grew up in America where we just kind of, you know, make everything a little less romantic, you know.
Simon Felice or Simone Felice. And you're from the Catskills. You were born and bred. It's in New York State. It's got some very ambitious names like Cairo and Heart's Content Road. And can you describe the Catskills?
That's what inspired me to name the small town in Black Jesus, Gay Paris. I grew up in the Catskills, and there's some names of the grand cities of the ancient world, Cairo, Rome, New York. It's just really ironic because usually the towns that are named Cairo and Rome are just like the smallest, poorest, weirdest little, you know, crossroads that you could imagine. So the little town I grew up in is the inspiration for the setting of this book, and it's called Gay Paris.
And we'd call that Gay Paris.
Gay Paris.
and naming is as a way of remakings on a new person or world is kind of a part of the theme of this book, the two main characters, Black Jesus and Gloria. So let's first take Black Jesus. That's not actually his name, is it? Can you tell me how he gets his name?
He is in a unit with a bunch of guys from Georgia and the other black guys, and the one guy's father was a preacher. So I grew up, had a lot of friends who were black Americans, and they would always joke, and their moms would say, Jesus was really black. He wasn't no white man. He come from Africa. So they joked with him because he's so pale and white and blue-eyed and blonde hair and basically white hair, and he was born on Christmas Day. So they took that and they sort of flipped it around, and they made fun of him, but in a loving kind of way.
That's a very Australian thing to do, you know, that for a redhead, they're often called bluey or a ranger, or if you're very tall, you might be called shorty.
Or little John and Robin Hood's Merry Men, right?
But it's also a description of really what I think happens to him too, as a character. He's a soul who's really been taken into the desert and been asked to sacrifice himself, really, like a lot of young men that have gone to war, you know, to sacrifice himself for the greater good. Is that part of what you wanted to explore in this book?
I guess that was maybe one of the subliminal subtleties behind it, but it's a really great observation that you made. I suppose there's that in there, and also we can say that we're fighting for freedom or, you know, liberty or whatever we pretend that we're fighting there for. But really, we're fighting for oil. But I feel like we're still fighting a holy war, you know? And
a holy war in what way?
I just feel like not necessarily between different religions, but just like Cormac McCarthy says, if war is not holy, then man is nothing but antic clay. So it almost seems like it's a thing that man needs to do to bloody one another. You know, it's kind of like a sacrificial thing. And even though we have laser guided missiles and smart bombs and drones and all that, it's really just the same as hacking each other to pieces with bits of iron. You know,
so would you describe yourself as an activist writer and singer?
No, I wouldn't say that. I'm just really just trying to observe the human condition and put it into whatever poetry it comes out of. So,
earlier this year, the BBC commissioned you to write a story to celebrate Bob Dylan's 70th birthday.
Yes, it was a real great honor to do that, actually, and a great surprise that they asked me to do that.
And you wrote a story based on the song Joey.
Yeah.
And and as the lyric goes, always on the outside, whatever side there was.
That's right.
That's a theme in your story in the book Black Jesus, and also in your songs to a certain extent. It's really a celebration almost of being on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've always kind of felt there in my own life.
Why is that? Because you had quite a, what I think is quite an idyllic childhood, growing up in this beautiful mountain.
Well, it was a beautiful natural environment, but I had a tough time growing up, just like many, many kids, you know. And I always kind of felt like I was on the fringe or the outside, or you know, maybe not welcome in the locker room, so to speak. You know.
Why was that?
I don't know. You know.
Were you a skinny, nerdy boy?
No. I was just a regular kid, really. But I feel like on the fringes of society, sort of exists kind of this really special untold magic. It's where I've always gravitated toward, and I've always just felt sort of part of that place. And I think that the people that have to struggle to be on this planet are kind of some of the most interesting people, you know?
So this book is about not your American apple pie characters. It's Lionel White, who's now called Black Jesus. He comes home from Iraq. He's blinded, but he's also damaged in other ways. And there are a lot of people like him.
Yeah, honestly, part of the inspiration for this book was a friend of mine who was a Marine and went to fight in the war. And he came home with wounds, but they're the kind that you can't see. And I wanted to write a story about, you know, the traumas of coming home and existing there and just really being a kid still. You know, I mean, they like to send you to war when you're 18, 19 years old. And when you're that young, you don't really ask questions, you know, and that's how they like you to be. So Lionel White asks the question at the end of this, near the end of this book, and he says, maybe I've been blind all my life.
And there are a lot of people like him. I was quite shocked by the figures of American homeless or those at risk. Over 56%, over half are returned veterans from, you know, from Vietnam, from right through to Iraq.
It's one of the biggest crimes on the top of the list of many crimes that the country I live in commits is not taking care of its veterans. I mean, it sends the, you know, the poorest people out there to fight and die and suffer and get blown up. And
so if you die, you get the big flag over the coffin, but if you turn back...
If you make it home, they're not going to help you out, you know. I mean, I've heard stories of veterans having to buy their own plane ticket home, you know, not getting the medicine they need and the support they need. So it's a really sad thing. You know, my grandfather was a Marine, and my other grandfather fought in World War II in the Pacific. And I wanted to be a Marine when I was a kid. And I had a camouflage suit and a BB gun, and I would run around the woods. And then my mom told me, hey, the pen is mightier than the sword. And I don't know if that's true, but it sounded really, really good.
You know? But you've always written, haven't you? Even as a child, you were writing.
I would just write little rhymes and make up little stories and stuff, yeah, since I was a kid.
So that would have made you a bit different, perhaps?
Yeah.
Why you felt you were on the outside a bit?
Rhyme and Simon.
Rhyme and Simon, is that what you were called?
Yeah.
Did you actually tell people your rhymes?
I would say them sometimes, yeah.
That was so uncool, probably.
Yeah, it wasn't that cool. Really.
So, but Black Jesus, he does have a home to come home to, but it's not actually the one he left. Can you explain what happens with his mum, Fat Deb, the wonderful Fat Deb?
The wonderful Fat Deb is... she's one of the central characters, and she's really like a rebel, you know. And she basically gave birth to Black Jesus by some form of immaculate conception, in that she just had sex with some dude and then sent him on his way and just had her boy. So it's just been her and her boy his whole life. And when she found out that he got wounded and blinded in the war, she wanted to do something kind for him, something sweet for him. So there's a Dairy Queen in their town, which is really like a staple.
Ice cream, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a staple American summertime place. It's where you go for ice cream in the evenings with your folks. And the sad thing is that where I live, like, most of the Dairy Queens have gone out of business. So they're kind of like these empty shells, you know, and they're shaped like a farmhouse barn, but they're like with windows and... they have like a little crow's nest on the top. So the one in their town, just like the one in my town, it ran out of business and it was empty. So she burns their trailer down. They have a mobile home, and she burns it down so that she can collect the insurance check.
Although she saves his baba, his toy elephant.
And she gets the insurance check, and she buys the Dairy Queen. So when he comes home, he's blind, and she brings him home. But it's Dairy Queen that they live in now. And she's made him a little bed up in the crow's nest and made sure that his babar is there, you know.
So into the lives of Fat Deb, the wonderful, strong and feisty Fat Deb, and Black Jesus and various other pretty memorable characters in this book, comes Gloria. Gloria, who's not actually Gloria. She used to be Desiree, then she becomes Desire, but then she's decided now she's going to be Gloria after a song. Lots of songs in this book.
Gloria, Gloria, I think they got your number, Gloria. I think they got the alias that you've been living under, Gloria. It's like she's running away from a very bad situation, you know, in Los Angeles, and she drives a small moped across America on a very painful and hallucinatory journey. And she hears in a diner one day the radio playing the song Gloria. So... she takes that as her new name because she wants to forget the past.
She's fallen foul of the perfect white boy. Her friend Brown Sugar says, you know, you got to watch the white boys because they got their cake from day one, and if they can't eat it too, they snap. And it can be like Nightmare on Elm Street. But even him as a character, he's flawed, but he's also... there's a redemptive quality to him too, despite his awfulness.
Yeah, I suppose that, you know, I've never been a fan of characters who are just black and white, you know, in life, people you meet or in films or in novels. And I think we've all got a bit of gray, and I think it's important to show that, you know.
But really what all these characters, you know, reaching for that big thing, the cure for emptiness, the joy, love, a clean conscience.
Mm-hmm. But I do believe in love, you know, and I believe that love is, at the end of the day, love is a more potent force than hate. And I've learned that even more in the past year because my wife and I have had our first child, and... just to have her in the world and to be her shepherd, you know, it's like you kind of realize that there's a lot more than yourself on this earth.
But you lost a child, didn't you?
We had a late miscarriage with our first baby, and it was really sad. But you know, I mean, that's just what happens to people. It happens all the time. And when it was so sad, but then afterward, we got consoled by so many friends and older women that we knew and different people, and, oh, that happened to me, and people confide in you. That happened 3 times to us, and we tried 5 times or 4 times. We lost. So then, it, you know, you feel like you're part of this, the human experience. It's just, you know, it's something. And to have a healthy baby last summer was like, you know, even more of a amazing gift.
A joy.
A gift, just a treasure, even more because of the struggle that we had beforehand.
And I think you've said in an interview that you sometimes you have to look down a dark hole to really find joy or to find happiness.
That's true. It's so true. And a friend of mine said to me the other night, since I've been down here in Australia, actually, I forget who, I'm going to totally bastardize the quote, but it's like, be kind because everyone you meet is fighting a great struggle. No matter how happy they look or how much money they have, be kind because everyone is fighting a great struggle. I think that people are just really trying to get by, and at the end of the day, just trying to find a little bit of joy and maybe a little bit of magic if they're lucky.
And fun too. There's quite a hilarious lateral solution to a dilemma with one of the characters in the book. But Gloria, she remembers a place called the Mystery Spot, which is near gay Paris. And Gloria thinks everything will be okay if she can only find the Mystery Spot. In a way, she does find it. It's in love. Mm. Is there such a place in the Catskills, this Mystery Spot?
Yeah, it was just like I described it. And it was basically like a tourist trap where there was a house and they said that the water ran uphill and there were, you know, the lights would go on and off and you would pay $3, $4, $5 and go in there and just be kind of disappointed. But this was the kind of thing that there was when I was a kid. There was, in the book I talk about Carson City. It's a Western theme park and it's since gone out of business and is totally abandoned now. And it's really, really haunted and ghostly when you drive by it. But it's like a boom town, cowboy town, just off the side of the highway that they built this whole place, and you would go there and, you know, there was Indians running around a campfire shooting arrows and cowboys shooting each other down at high noon, and it was a family place to go. So a lot of that sort of American summertime family thing has fallen into disrepair, and I feel like it's a metaphor for the way our country is as well. You know, since 9/11 especially, we've really kind of lost our innocence in a way. And maybe it's just that I was a child in the 80s. I'm not sure. But I feel like our golden days of youth are sort of behind us, and we're just kind of picking up the pieces. A lot of people are lost, you know, and me included, I would imagine. I think you're kind of you're lying to yourself if you're not a little bit lost. You know, there's nothing to really kind of hunt for or search for if you're not lost. You know, it's like Hansel and Gretel with the breadcrumbs, you know. Life is, you know, you should always be looking for some breadcrumbs, really. You know?
Except that you don't want to get to the witch's house.
No, you don't. You know.
And perhaps you could read some of Black Jesus for us.
Sure. The stripper touches his face. "Want to dance?" she says. "No, thanks," he says. "Why not?" "I'd feel like a homo," he says. Gloria just laughs, her hot breath flying off into the cold air, her fingers letting fall the umbrella so she can reach for the small of his back, her belly to his, till they rock softly in the empty lot, his maimed cheek against hers, her palm on his sweatshirt, his young heart inside, a faint metronome to set the tempo of their lost waltz. This is how they'll mend. This is how they'll dance the night away. Dance clean the darkness. Darkness inside. Darkness out. Till she hums a song to patch the holes, the ones that gape. 10 miles to the east stands a super Walmart, biggest in the state. And it hums, too, all day and night, weird and incessant, but they don't hear it. Not these kids, not tonight, not in gay Paris, where the Red Creek runs, where a trailer lies burnt and rusting on its bank, where cornfields stand withering and sear, where a stoplight changes color forever and swings in the wind like a hanged witch, and a coke dealer taps his foot as he rigs his scale, and a boombox plays soft hits, yesterday's favorites. What happened to the 20th century? Where did it go? Is time just a plastic explosive? Did we splinter to the four winds? Are we doves when we close our eyes? Are we killers when we sleep? Do we frighten easy? Do we shake when the phone goes dead? We who are each but a pixel, and horny for many things, and smaller than a stone on the beach, and just as beautiful, just as coarse. What are we headed for? How does it all play out? Will something come and swallow us one still winter's day? Will we dance down a scary rain? A dollar store pestilence, a blinding flash of light, a pale horse, no soft hit can soothe. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Hold on. I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. I was there and I saw what you did. Saw it with my own two eyes.
Simon Felice, reading and singing from his book Black Jesus here on ABC Radio National. I'm Anita Barrow. Simon Felice, you're clearly, this book is a lyric. It is very lyrical. Where do you split between yourself as a songwriter, singing to a group of people, a group activity, and this very solitary activity of writing for the ear and writing for the eye, really?
Yeah, I mean, I really come from the tradition of storytelling, the oral tradition of getting up and telling stories with one another in a poetry sense. And, you know, writing prose is a really lonesome act. That's why it's important to kind of write characters that you care about, because then maybe you don't feel so lonely. You know, and I feel like the songs and the prose are kind of branches of the same tree. You know, their roots are the same. But
storytelling.
Yeah, storytelling and the poetry. You know, like, I don't think anybody can write a good song without poetry, and I don't think anybody can write a great novel without poetry. I think it's an essential ingredient in really any art form. If you don't have the poetry, then you really don't have anything.
In a way, your poetry and your books and the novels, it's stirring the pot, gently stirring the pot, and showing these people on the margins, the people on the outside.
Absolutely, yeah. I see more poetry in the common folks than anyone else, really. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what our world is made up of, you know.
And in a sense, they're heroes. I mean, you say, you know, this is not a book about, you know, your classic sort of person who solves a mystery or is a hero. But in their way, in their world, and as you show in our own world, there are heroes.
Yeah, we can be heroes, like Bowie says, you know.
And your book is littered with 70s and 80s lyrics.
There's a boombox that plays throughout out the book. I tried to get my publisher to put a music box inside the book, but it was way too expensive.
But it's not.
No, I'm just joking. But there's a boombox that Fat Debbie plays, and I mean, I grew up in the '80s when the radio was God. You know, it's like that's where you learned about music. And for better or for worse, the Eurythmics and Phil Collins and
nothing wrong with the Eurythmics.
It's all burnt into my brain, and I can't get it out. So I figure if I have to live with it, then everybody else does if they want to read my book. Actually, I was a poet before I could ever play music or sing, and I was writing short stories before I could ever play music or sing. And I just it's taken me many years actually to develop my musicianship and my singing.
You're a drummer, is that right?
I play the drums. I play the guitar. And I sing. But I feel like writing stories is kind of a return to what I how I began as a young person. Like,
it's rhyming Simon.
You know, I've been working on this book for several years, and luckily, a great editor in London read a couple of the first chapters and really believed in my book and encouraged me to finish it.
And you wrote it when you were very sick too, I understand.
I finished editing it after I had an open heart surgery last summer, an emergency freakish thing that happened to me. It was a childhood ailment that I was born with I didn't really ever know about. So I finished the editing of it and the final tailoring of it after I survived this surgery. And
now you're a member of the Zipper Club.
Now I'm a member of the Zipper Club, yeah. It's sort of poetic in a way to think that there's a zipper that I can open up and sort of tuck things away or open up and let things go. You know?
Simon Felice, thank you very much for joining the book show.
It's my great pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And Simon Felice's book, Black Jesus, is published by Allen and Unwin.